Okay then, it's Tuesday. We have special guest. What I like about doing these kind of interviews, stroke, LSD, lunchtime social debates is, that's our script there. Okay, I've got your name and two things that I wanted to talk about. Okay, so that's us.
A blank sheet of paper.
A blank sheet of paper. We've got the Lieutenant Rodney Bean. Now, first of all, why Lieutenant Rodney Bean? It sounds a bit army, but you're Salvation Army, so I'm guessing there is a connection.
There is a connection. The Salvation Army is a church when it was formed way back in the late 1800s. William Booth decided to use military terminology in its positions, as opposed to other churches using other language. And we've kept at it. So as a lieutenant, I am a minister. My wife and I are both ordained ministers. That's another oddity about us. She's ordained as well. We're a couple, and we're in our first 5 years of ministry. So we're lieutenants. As we learn how to lead a church and how to make a change or a difference in the community that our church is in, we'll be made a captain, and then maybe a major, and we'll probably retire just after that. So that's sort of the hierarchy that goes through. And we're lieutenants. We're newbies. We've only been ministers 3 years, so we're still learning. But we're enjoying being on the island and the thrill of being sent to the island. We didn't choose to come here, but we were sent, and that's one of the Army's oddities.
Okay. So how close do you work with the Army then?
We don't work with the Army at all, not the military Army. The Salvation Army is a standalone church. One of the main body of churches, so you want to pigeonhole us, we're sort of in the same area as the Methodists, that sort of thing. A lot of our beliefs and theology are very similar to the Methodist church. And William Booth was a Methodist minister. And when he was trying to encourage those to come back into the church who lived on the streets of London in the East End in the times, the churches were sort of a bit wary about these drunkards that had been saved. And he ended up forming a church, which he didn't want to do, but he did. And we've now celebrated 151 years of being a church.
Good grief. So I know you weren't around 151 years ago, but, I mean, are the issues, the problems, still pretty much the same?
I think they are. They change a little bit. William Booth and the early days of the Army were very much against the abuse of things, the abuse of drink, the abuse of too much slavery, too much, all that sort of abuse of people. And we stand up for that today, actually. As a Salvationist, as an officer, I stand up to no drinking, no smoking, and no gambling, to make a stance to assist those who do get caught in the never-ending spiral of having too much. So we do make a stand in society, and society needs people to stand up and be counted within the community. And that's what we try and do.
Absolutely. Now, I watch a lot of TV. I doubt you get the chance to watch a lot of TV, but the one thing that really irritates me about the news is you never really get, you don't get the truth. You really don't get. But what I've noticed about the dramas that have got on BBC and ITV just lately, there's a lot of stuff that falls into that 150 odd years ago, and they're actually highlighting the issues that they have then. But you never saw the Sally Army. Would you mind if you call him Sally Army?
No, we'll call it the Sally Army.
I don't want to upset you. I mean, that just sort of slipped out. I was going to call it the Salvation Army from the very start. Is that acceptable to call it the Sally Army?
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's just one of those lifetime. You know, I get used to it, you know, so we are used to it. So that's no
good
problem.
Excellent. So when we go back to those, you don't very often see them.
You don't often. Often it's used that they'll show us if they want to bring someone to the idea of Christmas. You'll often see in dramas little Salvation Army band playing on the corner at Christmas. If they want to make a bit of a joke, you might find someone, a lady playing the tambourine, or the old joke of going into the pub with the war cries, which we don't do in the pubs very much now, but we still sell the war cry. But sometimes we get the mickey taken out a little bit. But we're big enough to live with that. We're not too fussed. We want to do what we do. We don't want to make a song and dance about it. We don't jump up and down. We just try and make a difference wherever God has placed us within the community. And working together with others in the community is one of the best ways of getting things done.
I'll be honest. I mean, I was one of those kids that grew up. We didn't have religion sort of installed into us. We were kind of a... I don't know whether we were allowed to just make our minds up, and we just did. I don't know. But I mean, I'm a great believer in I only have one rule, and that is do unto others as you'd have done to yourself. And I think that's in that big book. But that's the only thing I have. I'm not really that religious when it comes down to it. But I do like community, and we get onto community in a moment. But you know, just going back, I was one of those people that kind of felt I don't know. You look at people and think, oh, he's in the Sally Army. You take the mickey a little bit. But I must admit, as you get older, you grow up and you become a little bit more sensible. And you know, every time that I walk along Pyle Street and I'm looking through the door, because the door's kind of always open, it's, I don't know whether it's an open door policy, but I mean, even when you've got events on, it always seems to be open. And you look in and you think, there's smiles, there's people enjoying themselves. Yes, they're banging a tambourine, but look at the smile on their faces. And is it always like that?
If I said we always laugh and smile, that would be wrong. We do take life seriously sometimes, but we don't try and take our faith too seriously from the point of view of being pious and being religious. You know, I have a faith, but I try not to be too religious. I try to make it a living faith that actually achieves something, as opposed to just gathering dust. We're forever moving chairs. We jokingly say that we're in the ministry of moving chairs. We move the chairs around for Mums and Tots, youth club, cafe. If the chairs were just in ordered rows for Sunday service, they'd gather dust. And what's a dusty building for? It's nothing. Yeah. So the fact that we have to move the chairs around regularly and sometimes get quite tired doing it is actually a joy. And to do things different. This weekend we had a lady who hires the hall for art classes. She had an exhibition, all her students' work. We had over 80 artworks hanging on the wall. A lovely day on Saturday, but she left them up, or they all left them up for Sunday. So we celebrated our harvest with 60 or 70 artworks of rivers, mountains, trees.
Brilliant.
All around the building. It was fantastic and colourful. And then we encouraged people to go and walk round and look at the paintings and say, what does this say to you about the lovely world that we live in?
Yeah.
And on the island, we have some cracking views. And we should never take them for granted. But it was great to see. So we do things differently and enjoy our faith. And that's the thing to do.
Do you know what? I think sometimes we should just take a minute sometimes and really appreciate what we have got rather than what we haven't. And, you know, I was talking to you off air just, you know, just while the news was playing. And we were talking about a young lady that was, I think it was on a BBC programme, The One Show. And the guy there is getting ready to do something for children in need, and he's going, I think he's rambling from one end of the country to the other or something, and he's got this young lady that's going to help him. I think, you know, she, I don't know how old she is, she's probably about 18-19, and she had meningitis when she was very small, and she had legs amputated, and she, you know, she's had to have something in the region of 60 trips to the hospital, 60 operations, and she's had the most, well, incredibly bad luck, but she's still here, and she goes swimming, she does all these things, and you think to yourself, how incredible. And I was just focused on the television program. You just had a bad day, and you look at that and you think, do you know what, sometimes we should just realize just incredibly just how lucky we are. Just take a minute. But we don't anymore. We seem to, you know, it comes to something when something like that shocks you to your boots, and to make you realize just what we've actually got. Why do you think that is over the last, because this is, you know, been kind of getting more and more so for X amount of years. Is it social media? Is it the internet? Is it we're just so busy with our lives and become selfish individuals, and we don't see these things?
I don't know. It's probably a complex answer. But I think, yeah, I suppose we can do so much within our own home now. You could say there's very little need to leave. You can watch stuff. You can interact with people. You can order your food. You can become very reclused and just think, well, as long as I'm okay, the world's okay. And you can forget the community. Growing up, I can remember the neighbours to where I lived with Mum and Dad. We had a gate in the garden fence, so you could actually go backwards and forwards and talk to each other without having to go round and outside. And that was like normal. I was brought up on that to be normal. But nowadays, sometimes people just think, well, I've got my bit. I've paid for it. It's mine and I'm happy. And I come into work. I go out to work. You don't work where you live. You might travel. And you just sort of carry on going. You take the kids to school by car for various reasons, and you end up just being a little bit isolated. And you have to make an effort sometimes to say, there is more to life than this. You know, I am part of a bigger community, and what can I do? And it, what the blessing we have is when sometimes people come to us and say that thing. And as I was talking to you earlier, a lovely lady who's a caterer in Ryde came to us and said, I've got a great business. It's been good to me. What can I do to put back to the community? And she provided the food for over 100 people this Sunday. And 71 sat down to a two-course meal, people from all aspects of life, and we had a great time. And the buzz of conversation between people who'd never met before was fantastic. It's because she decided to give something back to the community.
How lovely is that? And what's really sad about that is, you know, it's not in the news, it's not reported, it's not... So that, you know, so that it can inspire mm-hmm. other people. I mean, that must inspire those people that were there, maybe helping out, maybe invited along. You know, they must be thinking, right, OK, this lady's taken the time and the trouble to do this. What can we do? What can we do to help our fellow man?
You hope so. I mean, we've had stories from, especially the Christmas Day lunch, when we do a big one on Christmas Day, of people who've come in, witnessed it, and said, I need to do something back where I live. We had a family that was visiting from the mainland, and they were visiting family, but on Christmas morning, they had some time. They came and volunteered because their 12-year-old son had seen an advert on TV and turned to his parents and said, we need to do something for somebody else on Christmas Day. Can we help the Salvation Army?
Wow.
They came down, they set up tables, chairs, laid the tablecloths, and as people came in at about one, they had to go to spend time with their family. But do you know, they were part of the community that day, and they promised us that this year they would find somewhere on the mainland and they would help. So hopefully by a 12-year-old son seeing something and making a difference, the whole family is now realising that they need to put something back. And it was great to witness.
Lovely to see a 12-year-old doing that as well.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, maybe at the age of 12, you don't very often see those kind of things because you're too busy playing games or thinking about yourself. And so when did you realise that you wanted to help people? When did you realise that you were destined to help people out?
Well, I suppose it was a easy transition. I was brought up in the Salvation Army. My parents were in the Salvation Army, and I was also encouraged to take part in scouting. And scouting also believes in, you know, supporting and doing good things. And I had a great time in both those organisations. The Salvation Army is my church, and scouting for activities and doing stuff. So in a way, it was ingrained in me and taught to me by my parents, and they were great example and role models to me about thinking of others before yourself and doing a good turn every day, as the old scout promise would say. And I've carried that on through life. And then a few years ago, when I thought I was settled, God said to me, I want more. I want you to hand in your job, and my wife as well, and train to be Salvation Army ministers. Go off to London. I had to write essays again for the first time for 30-odd years and didn't think I could pass a level 6 diploma. And actually, I did. And God said, see, you could do it. And now here we are. And when we came to the island 3 years ago, and in the Salvation Army you get a sealed envelope, and in February you find out where you're going in July, you don't have much choice. We found it would come to the island. We arrived on the island, and in an interview, I think, with the county press, I said, we want to make a difference. They said, why have you come to the island? We want to make a difference in people's lives. And that's what the Salvation Army wants to do, and that's what we want to do when we've been sent here. And that's the biggest thing that we hold on to, is make a difference in people's lives.
Brilliant. It's brilliant to hear, and it's great to know that there's people like yourself out there and that hopefully will inspire others. And you know, we put the community spirit back into the community, because I think over the years, I mean, I was telling you also off air that my mum is one of those you know, those people, elderly people, that sort of says, what this country needs, a good war. then they'll realise just how lucky they are. And I think that's probably a little bit too extreme, but
yes.
You can see where she's coming from.
You can understand where she's coming from. It's something that pulls the nation together, that means you have to do something, and that's when you see the best in people. Last Wednesday, there was that fire in Newport, which was just up the road from the Salvation Army Hall. We sensed it was going on. Youth Club was about to start, but one of our helpers, who's a mum, they went up to have a look and realised that people were being evacuated to the Air Cadet Centre in Drill Hall Lane. But for some reason, they didn't have tea and coffee and that sort of stuff. So they came back, and three of our youngsters, you know, 13, 14, 15, went up with tea and coffee and biscuits in the Drill Hall Lane Cadet Centre, serving alongside. So the community came together. in that place. And then they also took tea and coffee to the firemen. I turned up a bit later. I was doing something else. And we spoke to people who'd been evacuated and just smiled at them, tried to make them feel at ease, while the council, and I think it was Southern Housing, I believe, came in to sort out accommodation for them. And the community came together to people in need. And on a small scale, that's exactly what needs to happen. So if it happens on small scale all over the place, eventually, perhaps we might get the realisation that we can do it on a larger scale as well.
What a wonderful story that is. I know it's, you know, I feel for those families that, you know, had to be evacuated. They've now lost their homes and so on and so forth. But what a wonderful positive story that comes out of that. I mean, the one thing that does irritate me a lot about those kind of situations is you get that group of people there that are doing those things, wonderful, lovely things for people that are desperate. And, you know, just across the road, you see people that are the other side of the coin. All they're doing is filming it and putting it on Facebook. And you think, right, okay, which do I want to aspire to? Which would I want to be inspired by? It certainly ain't those ones that film it and put it on Facebook. I just think that's incredibly sad. But there's two sides of that story. And like you say, that's right on your doorstep there. And it's right, we live just around the corner. And, you know, seeing that. But what we didn't see was what you were doing. And maybe that's why we should shout about it. Because, you know, the good work that you see, we don't see behind the scenes. Maybe we should escalate that, put that on a pedestal, put that on a stage, put that so that people can see it, so they can be inspired, and we can change the way we think of communities, what it's really about, not what we think it's about, but what it's really about. And that is, you know, it's helping your fellow man whenever they need it.
Yes,
because you never know when you're going to need it yourself.
I think bad news always seems to make good headlines, and good news doesn't, and that's one of the sadness things. So, but also, we don't do it to be noticed. We just do it because we think it's the right thing to do. A few years ago, the simple phrase came out, WWJD, which you could wear on a wristband, and it just said, what would Jesus do? Don't worry about theology, don't worry about studying stuff, but what would Jesus do? He would help people, he would feed them, he would do this, he would smile at them, he'd hold their hand if they were ill. What would Jesus do? And just do it. Not for song and dance, not for all praises, look at us, but just do it. And it's such a privilege to be able to do that. And one thing that I am for always humble is that the general public know the Salvation Army, they know what we stand for, and they support us. And I would always say thank you, thank you, thank you so much to the people of this island who make our work possible. Because without them, we couldn't do it.
Has there ever been a time in your time that you know, it gets close to the fact that, because I'm guessing you have to have some amount of funding or something, does it ever get really close that you don't have any funding and there won't ever be a, will there come a point where there won't be a Salvation Army?
I hope not. I don't know. It always, we have faith, and always things seems to come in. We're just starting to look at Christmas now, and I've had a couple of phone calls already from some local supermarkets who want to help, and people want to help. And just when you think, how are we going to afford to do this, something seems to crop up. And at the moment, currently, we're receiving food that's just about to go out of best before from a couple of supermarkets. On a regular ordered thing, properly organised, we go and pick it up, and we're able to put that to good use. And I think because of that, we'll always be there. Because the public will support us. We know why we're doing it. I'm doing it because Jesus told me when I see somebody else, I treat them as him and feed them, look after them. Don't preach to them first, just look after them. Because that's what Jesus... excuse me, I'm getting tongue-tied now. That's what Jesus would do. And I think because of that, we'll always be here as long as the public need us. And I think the community and public will always need people like the Salvation Army. There's others that Definitely. Do great things. We're not the only ones, we know that. And it's great to work in association. It was great to work with the Army cadets on Wednesday. Their hall, their facilities, our tea and coffee. What a combination. And if people work together, you can create more than the individuals. And I still can't remember what that famous line is about the sum of the parts being greater than the individual. That's something like that. And it's true.
Just do that again.
The sum of the parts is greater than the individuals. Something like that.
Okay. All right.
Someone will probably correct me, but it's similar-ish, you know.
Okay. So I mean, your wife has been ordained as well. So how does that go? Whenever you go anywhere, do you take the lead, or is... What happens?
Yes, she's ordained as well, so she is definitely not the vicar's wife. We've both been through training. We're both ordained. We tend to take it in turns. I do a Sunday service, and then next week she'll do the Sunday service, and then sometimes we separate. I go to Fellowship House, which is our hostel in Ryde, which we haven't even got onto yet, but that's a great outlet. I go today. I've just had the tough job of going there this morning, and I have to sit down and eat a cooked breakfast with about 9 or 10 of the residents. It's a tough job.
It is, isn't it? Oh, blimey. What was on the plate? Come on.
All bacon, yeah. Eggs, sausage, hash browns, yeah. Baked beans, yeah. And toast. And it was very nice. We meet at about 9, we cook it together, we sit down and eat it together, we then wash up together, and you have a time of fellowship that's more at ease than a formal sit down and a conversation about how they're doing in life, how they've ended up in a Salvation Army hostel, what they're doing and how they're progressing to move on into a flat of their own. You sit down over food, and the fellowship and the chats or the conversations I have are fantastic. So yeah, it's, I jokingly say, when it's a hardship to sit down and eat a cooked breakfast, it's a delight. But it's a delight to have the conversation. Now, my wife goes there on a Thursday, and she talks to people, and we both share it. So we tend to share out what we do. But the benefit of the, for the church is that we have two ordained ministers who can take part and do the sort of things that ministers do. And it makes it a partnership, a real, real lovely partnership. And I think we work together quite well. And we work together, we live together the whole time, so we make sure that works okay. And it's an interesting concept, but what William Booth started it right from the beginning, that women would be an equal part in ministry and were not looked down upon. And as the army's grown up with that, and it's there in our DNA. I think William Booth said, "Some of my best men are women." And it's been there ever since. So,
would he be able to get away with that now?
Probably not, actually. These were the Victorian times back then, sort of thing, and that was a bit different. But yes, he did have some famous speeches, did William Booth. So if you Google them, you'll find them on YouTube, and some of them are really good.
I am going to do that. So you've been on the island for how many years?
We've been here 3 years now.
And how long is the deal? When you get sent here, how long do you have to...
It's between 4 to about 7 years is the average, depending on your family circumstances. If you have children in education, they won't move you at certain points. Our two children are beyond education, so that's fine. If you have elderly parents in a nursing home.
Are you going to go out and have a couple of kids just to sort of, so you can stay here?
Oh, no. No, I think we're past that one now. So we'll be here as long as the powers that be in the Salvation Army think that we can continue to make a difference here, and that we think that we can still work towards something. If they want to use our talents elsewhere, or they think somebody else would be good to come onto the island for new eyes, you know, new passion, then we'll be moved. And we've signed up to that, and we're happy with that. It'll be a wrench to go from the island, because it's a lovely place to be.
Yeah.
You get round the, it's an island, and there's a ferry. And, boy, is that going to be awkward, or is it going to cost a lot of money? And at times it is awkward, and at times it does cost money. But the joys of being on this island... And you can decide, you know, which beach should we go to today?
Yeah.
And that's a hard dilemma in the summer, you know?
Sounds like when you eventually get the call to go somewhere else, you are really going to miss it. And they're going to be big shoes to step into.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's going to be... We're going to miss it, I think. And who knows where we'll be sent. It could be a long way away. It could be just over the water. We've got no idea. But we'll bridge that gap. That sounds good about going over the water. That was almost a joke then.
Look, don't talk about the bridge.
No, right? We keep it quiet.
You start talking about the bridge, you're going to become very unpopular overnight, in fact.
We'll get over that, and we'll go wherever God and the Salvation Army thinks that we're best be used. But yes, personally, the island's been a lovely place for 3 years. We've made some great friends. We've worked with great friends with other churches. We do like working with the other churches in Newport. We're part of the group that is called Churches Working Together in Newport, and we do things and support each other, and that's a fantastic thing to do. So it would be a wrench, yeah.
Good for you. Now, you've got hopefully a period of time where you're going to be on the island. Is there anything that you look at and think, right, I would, if there was one thing that you could achieve between now and you getting on the ferry, what would it be?
That's a tricky one. I don't know. I think one of the things we thought about, would it be nice if we actually outgrew our current building? If we got too big for our current building and we had to move? And sometimes on a Sunday, we are pushing the boundaries with 70 or 80 people in there for worship, and we are pushing the seams. And could we do more in the community if we had a couple more rooms? We only really have one room to do all our programme, which is why we're forever moving chairs. So, yeah, perhaps it would be nice to outgrow where we are and move to a more suitable building, but that's a big, big wish. There's something nice about being where we are, but sometimes you think, well, if we outgrew it, would that be a blessing? And I don't know. We think about it. We pray about it. Who knows?
So just so people know, we know where you are in Newport. You're in Pyle Street. Okay. Whereabouts are you in Ryde, so we know exactly where you are?
Oh, I always forget. It's just around the corner from the police station on the corner of Green Street.
They've still got a police station?
There's still a police station in Ryde. It's actually the site of the old Salvation Army Hall. The old Ryde Salvation Army Hall.
I know where it is.
And when that became unmanageable with a very small congregation, they were amalgamated into the Newport Corps along with the Cowes Corps, so we became the Isle of Wight Corps. So we are the Isle of Wight Corps of the Salvation Army. We're celebrating 12 years of that this year. On the Ryde Hall, we built a 27-bed hostel. We call it a life house because we believe a hostel should be more than just a place to live. We need to add something extra to make it their home, because for 27 men and now women, it's their home. They have their own room, but a communal kitchens, and we take people in from the streets or people who have been thrown out or wherever, and work them through so that they can move on into a place of their own. And the joy is seeing someone come through and then after 9 months, 6 months or a year, moving off into their own flat, and then in a year's time they are still in their own flat and managing, paying the bills, coping, having a good life. And you think, we have made a difference in that person's life. And when you multiply that by all the people that go through, you realise that, I say, God's work is still being done on that centre, because we are looking after people and making a difference. I keep coming back to this thing, making a difference in someone's life.
Yeah.
And that's really good. So we've got Ryde there and Newport, and that is where we are on the island. And from there we try and be the Isle of Wight Corps, which is difficult sometimes when driving around and visiting people over in Yarmouth or Freshwater or down to Shanklin, but we try and be an island-wide Salvation Army.
Should you be there? Should you be in the West Wight as well as other places as well? Is it limiting the work that you do? Could it be one of those things that you think, right, okay, do you know what, before I go, I want to set up something in the West Wight at least?
I don't know. They always say, where is the Salvation Army on the Isle of Wight? It's wherever people live. And some of our congregation live in Yarmouth and Totland and Freshwater. So where they live, they are being the Salvation Army and they're making a difference. And some of them, they do things within the community. So I think I would just like to be able to do things in the community. When we come to Christmas, which is one of the busiest periods, and where everyone phones up and asks for the Salvation Army band at Christmas for carols because it just sounds so Christmassy, we try and do what we can. We play in Yarmouth for the... we support the hospice carol service in the square when they light the lights. We don't collect. We take our band along and play, and the hospice collect for the good work they do. But that's in Yarmouth. We then try and play in Sandown. We play in Busy Bees in Ryde. We play all over, so that we do try and get out and cover as much of the island as we can. We get far more requests than we can actually do. I think we've had on one Saturday December, we've had 3 requests to be at Christmas events, and we can't do that. So unfortunately, we have to say no sometimes. And it does sort of, it's sad, but that's the thing of Christmas. It only happens once a year, so you're busy.
You get more bookings than Duran Duran by the sound of it. So maybe you've got to expand a bit.
Yeah. So, well, we're also looking to expand, and then the more that people have, the more people we have, the more we can do, and the more that we can make a difference. And it just keeps coming back to doing that. I enjoy it, and it keeps us busy. Hopefully, keeps us out of mischief. Keeps us tired sometimes, but we keep going on, which is why I had this cold a few weeks ago and it's taken a while to clear up. I'm still coughing occasionally, but I haven't coughed into your microphone so far, so I'm
not
well.
Yet. I'll tell you off if you did. All right.
Thank you.
Do you ever get like down? Do you ever get like to a point where oh, this isn't working. I mean, you seem to me to be a guy that is always on the up, always got a smile on your face, and always positive. Is there times when you think, you know, am I doing the right things? Do you ever get the doubts?
I think we all do at times, because you can't smile all the time, because life throws things at you sometimes. We try and have one day a week off, which is Friday, and we try and relax on those days and do something for ourselves, and that helps you replenish your sort of batteries, whether physical, mental or spiritual. Just do something to relax. If you have a series of Fridays where things crop up, emergencies crop in, or things like Good Friday, obviously Good Friday, Easter, you can't have Friday off. It's one of the most important days of the Christian calendar. And for example, if I'm being really honest, and last Friday we had to go to a funeral of a good friend in Chelmsford up in Essex, and 3 months ago I did the wedding of his son.
Right.
So we had the joy of doing Gary's wedding, and then 11 weeks later I was at his father's funeral, and that was tough. I wasn't doing the funeral, I was just there as a friend.
Sure.
But that was tough, and we had to drive all the way to Chelmsford, funeral and drive back, and you know, we felt like we didn't have a break last week because it was just so intense.
Yeah.
And it was the personal, so yeah, it was quite difficult to sort of think, I've got to, how can I smile and stand up and praise God this weekend? And it's going to be a tough one for me. But then when I came in and saw the hall full of all that artwork, do you know, that lifted me up. I saw the artwork and spent the day there talking to the artists that had painted them, and it uplifts you. So you're back on, you think, yeah, this is fantastic. So you do have down, everybody does.
Do you ever doubt the faith?
No, I don't think so. Sometimes you sort of think, is what I'm doing worth it? Does it make a difference? Could I be doing other things? But they're fleeting, sort of just in and out, and you just realise, no, this is me. This is what I've chosen. Yeah, I did give up the nice job. I did hand back the company car, the company credit card, the expense account. I did hand all that back and say, no, I wanted a simpler life. I'm not sure if it is simpler, because it's complex with all dealing with lots and lots of things, but... Yeah. It's a completely different life. Yes, I'm still glad we made that decision. There are times when it's tough, but no, generally, yeah, we're still great. And
see, you come across as a really human kind of guy, real, and you know, everyone's going to have days when they feel like, oh, I'm not sure this is for me. I'm not sure whether they've, you know, this we can carry on and so forth. But I look at some people that are in a religious position, and you think to yourself, They put so much pressure on themselves. Certain religions, they have to abstain from certain things. And you think, well, those certain things, that's impossible, isn't it? So, I mean, there you are. You've gone off and had a load of kids. How many?
I've only got two.
Only two.
Right, that's okay. Enough.
So you've had two kids. But, I mean, you know, there's other religions. You think, why have you put yourselves under so much pressure to abstain from something that's probably the most natural thing in the world? Whereas, you know, there's not so much pressure on you to do that, but you still have to go through the everyday traumas, the everyday asking yourself whether, you know, not every day, but certain days when you're down days, you think, is this the right thing for me? Mm. You know, but it sounds like you don't doubt the faith.
I don't doubt, but we are human. And
sure.
Sometimes we
get
tired.
That's nice.
And you can get tired physically, you can get tired mentally, and you can get tired spiritually. And those times you do have to say, do you know, I need a couple of hours to myself. I'll go up to somewhere like the Priory, and just go into a quiet room for a few hours and have a coffee and talk to people, or I've been out to Core Abbey, or just even I've driven down to a lovely it's the car park by Black Gang, on the top of Black Gang by the Pepper Pot.
Yeah.
Have a coffee and just look at that view and sit there and just contemplate life, the universe and everything, and nothing.
Yeah.
And you realise, yeah, I'm human, but it's still great to be here. And you just realise. So you do need times just sometimes to reevaluate and just take a breath and go, and we do that because we're human. We're not superhuman. We're just normal people who've decided to do this sort of thing. And life sometimes is tough.
That's what comes across as when I first met you. That's what came across. It wasn't like, you know, showing me religion. It wasn't like showing the listener religion. It wasn't ramming it down our throat. Mm-hmm. It was just this normal guy that has a faith and a belief and a vision. And you know, that to me is simple to follow. It's not going to make me feel uncomfortable. It doesn't, because it don't make me feel uncomfortable at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, I'm probably like a lot of people that are listening to you now talk, are quite inspired by the work that you do. Mm-hmm. and what you do and how you come across. You come across as this normal, down-to-earth kind of guy. Whereas, you know, in the past, maybe we chat to people that are in your position at other religions, other positions and so on, and it's almost like you feel patronised or you feel like somebody's judging, but you kind of look at us and, you know, I feel like on the same level. That's how it feels. We'll take a break and we'll come back.
Yes.
I want to talk about the hostel next.
Thank you.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by jobsontheisleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
Across the Isle of Wight and across the world, this is Vectis Radio.
The White Military and Heritage Museum. Situated on the main Cows to Newport Road, the museum will excite your senses. Adults and children of all ages can experience the surge of adrenaline on an armoured vehicle ride around the tank track. For a real treat, why not try a ride in one of the Centurion tanks? There's also a covered rifle range to test your shooting skills. Enjoy refreshments in the cafe or the mess bar. Come along to the White Military and Heritage Museum, where you will be welcomed with open arms by our volunteer team. All profits are redistributed among armed service charities. Call 01983 300037 for more details or to book your ride.
Vectis Radio is a community radio station based in the heart of Newport. It currently helps youngsters between the ages of 11 and 19 and up to 26 with additional needs. Next year we're going FM, and in order to continue the good work that we carry out within the community, we need to raise funds for the FM equipment. To do so, we are putting on a number of fundraising gigs, the first of which is on November the 18th. It's at the Riverside Centre, it's a Friday, and it features the local band All Washed Up, plus special guests, a raffle. It promises to be a really fun night. Tickets are just £5 and you can get them from Vectis Radio. Help us to help the community and be a part of our FM history.
Isle of Wight Feet help people with foot problems and footwear. Make an appointment to see my dad for professional chiropody and podiatry services. He specialises in making orthotic insoles and made-to-measure footwear. Don't put us off and suffer. We're opposite the Conservative Club in Cross Street, open from Tuesday to Saturday from 9 to 5. Telephone 864444 or search iwfeet.co.uk.
Stay social and get in touch. It's at Vectis Radio on Twitter. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by jobsontheisleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
Welcome back to part two. My guest is, let's just read the script here, two lines, Lieutenant Rodney Bean. I've still got to talk about, we've done that, and, hostels. That's it.
That's the script gone, is it? Yeah.
Okay, so you touched on the hostels, and there's a hostel in Rye, but there's not one in Newport.
No, that's correct. We have a 27-bed hostel in Rye. It's been there about 5 to 6 years now. So it was built on the old land of the old Salvation Army Hall. Originally it was just for men, but this year it opened up to women for the first time, and also we're increasing from 27 to 51 beds. Now the site itself can't be expanded, so what we're doing is we're having two like satellite houses, so homeless people or people in need will come into Fellowship House itself, and then as they move through, when they need less care and less supervision, they'll move into one of the satellite houses and then eventually move into their own property. And the important thing at Fellowship House is not to move anyone into their flat until they're ready. There is no point putting a homeless guy in a flat if he's going to get chucked out because he hasn't paid the rent, he hasn't cleaned, he's done damage to the property in three months, and he'll be back on the streets. So what Fellowship House does is go through them with all they need to know to be self-maintaining. So they need to look after themselves, look after the flat, clean, pay the bills, stay on top of the benefits, all those things that mean that when they move into a flat, it's long term. And hopefully I have the joy of visiting them sometimes 6 months or a year later and they're still in their flat. And then you realise that you've actually made a big difference, not just a temporary emergency difference. And that's what Fellowship House is about.
That's incredible. So who roughly are the people? I mean, I'm guessing they come from all walks of life.
There is, if I took you there, there's 27 people there and there's 27 different stories of how they got there. Whether they're youngsters, middle-aged or even older, there's not one story to homelessness. They do say that anyone can be three paychecks away from being homeless in this society, and that is true. And you can find yourself being homeless for just circumstances.
Crikey, that's scary.
Breakdown, marriage breakdown, family breakdowns, loss of job, renting somewhere that becomes unrentable and kicked out, fire, as last week, anything can happen. And you can find yourself out on the streets, and it can be tough on the streets.
That's really scary when you say you're three paychecks away from being
it's
homeless.
Possible. Anyone's possible.
What would you say to the current MP that actually says that there are no homeless people on the island?
I think that is wrong. There are homeless people on the island. The numbers are very hard to pin down, and you can. I end up talking about hardcore homeless. And some of those actually enjoy being homeless. They like it in a way. Sounds quirky, but they get used to it. And actually, if you move them somewhere, they'll sleep on the floor and not the bed for the first month or two because they're just so
Crikey.
Used to sleeping on hard ground. You get hardcore homeless. You get those who who are sort of, they are used to it, but they really want to move on. You get a lot of sofa surfing who will sleep on a friend's sofa for two nights. And then before they get thrown out or outstay their welcome, they go and sleep on somebody else's sofa for two or three nights and then somebody else's sofa. And if you have about eight or nine friends and you've got quite a good nature, you can sustain yourself sofa surfing for quite a while before you outstay your welcome. And that's what we call the hidden homeless. And there's a lot on the island who do that. And some are just happy, especially in the summer, to have a tent and go round this lovely island, pick up a bit of casual part-time work, which perhaps they shouldn't, but they do. And they sustain themselves. It's only in the winter when it gets really hard for them, when the rain hits and the cold wind bites, and then it can be very bleak down certain parts of this island. So there is no one simple answer or one simple number to the homeless, because they're all hidden, different, and difficult to pin down.
What about just going back to the fact that sadly the authorities don't really see as that there are any figures that suggest there are homeless people, and you've got 27 beds and 27 mm-hmm. people in them, and I'm guessing there's a waiting list.
Oh, there's always a waiting list. We are waiting desperately for these new beds to come online, which have been slowed down by building works and all regulations and that sort of stuff. We are desperate for them to come online because we have waiting lists. We have people who we know. I was talking to one last week, lovely guy. He's sleeping in a tent. He's only got one eye, and he needed to get to Portsmouth last week. So we helped him get to Portsmouth, to the hospital. But he would love to be in somewhere. He's not a youngster. He's older than you and I, and he's sleeping in a tent. Now, as the winter hits, that's going to get tougher
sure.
and tougher. I would love that to happen, to open up and get more in. And
when you say and I think this is wonderful what you do, it's about you've got to show people how to do things, because you don't want them to then just go into a flat and then 3 months later they're mm-hmm. out of that flat because they haven't been able to look after themselves. Wouldn't it be nicer as well, you're doing that end, wouldn't it be nicer if certain people within the authorities actually said, well, now we're more accepting that these figures are right, so we are also going to put something in place too, which helps you, rather than hinder? Because at the moment, I'm guessing it's a case of, well, they're not deemed as homeless, so they're not going to get the help that they need from other people, authorities. You know, they get the help from you, but maybe they need some help elsewhere as well. So maybe it's worth, you know, okay, you can only do what you're going to do, but maybe it's worth involving authorities, people in high places, to say, hey, look, this is what we're doing. We accept that there are figures. We accept that there are people that are struggling. We accept that there are people that are homeless. You need to do the same, and you need to work with us, not against us, but you need to work with us so we can fix these people's lives.
One of the things we do at the hall, we have a cafe that opens Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And if people come in and we either give them a bacon roll or a drink or food, we always take a note of it. We have a booklet and we take some simple details down of a bit of name, the reasons why, has benefits been stopped, have they been kicked out of, or just simple stuff. And every Salvation Army Corps in the country will do that. And then we send them to London and they use that information to pester the authorities. Because if you just go to them and say, there is this need and this homeless, they will say, prove it. So we do take detailed records of what we do so that someone can go to an MP up in London and say, this is what we do. This is what we do on the Isle of Wight. We've given out X number of bacon rolls and coffee this year to homeless and blah, blah. And they've got evidence. We've got it written down. So we do try and make a difference and remind people in authorities, local and national, what we're doing. And to be fair, a lot of them do know what we're doing and we do have some support. But in these day and age of budget cuts and restrictions, it's becoming harder and harder to do stuff. But we still want to shout and say more needs to be done. The general public are fantastic in their response. What can we do as a nation to work together? And so that's why we make sure that we record what we're doing so that we can pester the people to do it. So
good for you. Yeah. Good for you. I think it's amazing. This story is amazing for all the wrong reasons. You know, 27 people. Yeah. And obviously, if you had a bigger premises, you could help so many more people.
Or when we go to 51 beds, that will be that we will fill up those beds in 1 or 2 days, probably. It'll go quick.
And obviously we had the chap from Kevin Newton.
Yes,
who's
Kevin.
Got the bus. And,
yep.
And you've actually been helping him. It's not been a case of cold shoulder him, he's trying to copy what we do. No, you've actually helped him, haven't you?
Well, I met him a couple of years ago and he was helping out with clothes for the homeless. And I heard through a resident of Fellowship House that he was hiring a hall in the Wooden Bridge area. And I just said, well, he can use our hall for nothing because it's something that we would support. So instead of hiring a hall in Wootton, he came into Newport. We used our hall. We made teas and coffees available to him and his volunteers that come in, and any of the homeless or those in need who came in, and that was fine. And I know Kevin also, he helps with the shoebox appeal at Christmas, and he delivered shoeboxes on Christmas Day when we feed about 85, and we were able to give out shoeboxes with presents for those in need. And I know now that he's trying to get this bus up and running in time for Christmas, because at the moment there is no emergency night shelter provision for Christmas. The school that was used, or the ex-school that was being used, is now become a school again. And the lovely couple, I can't think of their surname, but Ruth and Andy, who ran that, have been trying to get another property, and it's been difficult. The bus is there, but there's been a few hiccups with the bus. Who knows what will happen? I think I said to you earlier, Christmas always, the emergency night shelter for Christmas always seems to be lastminute.com. It always seems to come in with like 2 or 3 days to spare, and there'll be something. But what it will be, I don't know. But we will work with Kevin if he wants. There's a guy called Trevor the Soup, I call him, the pop-up soup kitchen. Him and I exchange food sometimes if we get a surplus. He had a surplus of bread and he gave it to me. I had a surplus of chicken. And I gave him some chicken, and we swapped over because we both try and help support those in need. And so we try and make sure we don't compete with each other, but we try and help each other, because there's no point competing.
So will it be a case of, when he gets his bus up and running, he might phone you and say, have you got any spare rooms? And might be the other way.
Who knows? You know, if you've got them on the bus, then you can get the details and find out. And if we have spare spaces, that's a good opportunity then to
work together
somewhere, you know.
How lovely is that, working together?
Well, I think it's the only way. You know that I've said that before. It's the only way. We've got to work together. That's what community really should be about.
I think it's absolutely wonderful what you do, and I say we've still got a few minutes left, so I still want to promote the good work that you do.
Thank you.
So, you know, it's a case of I think if you were given more and more assistance, mm-hmm. you can do more mm-hmm. and help people. And mm-hmm. it doesn't fall into millions, does it? I mean, it's every little bit helps.
No, I mean, we are starting now towards the Christmas rush. We will be looking to feed between 80 and 85 on Christmas Day. I'm going to cough now for the first time, I think. Told you.
You've been coughing all the way through. You're not aware of that.
Quietly. That was the first hour one. And where was I? Yes, turning away from the microphone. We'll feed about 85 on Christmas Day. But before that, we'll take out food parcels to families that are in need. Yeah. And I think last year we did about 20. And we try and make the Christmas food parcel special. There's no point just giving a family a normal hamper, because if we expect to have a few chocolates and sweets for Christmas, so should they. So we put together some really nice food parcels for Christmas. Here comes the coughing fit now.
Maybe we should put some tunes in or some cough sweets.
Nice food, and we try and make them special. So that to them, Christmas is also special. And then we take them around and deliver them, and that can be quite hard work. That 2 or 3 days before Christmas, delivering round food parcels, and they're not small ones. We're talking quite big ones here. And last year we got given lots of potatoes and vegetables from a supermarket, and we were able to add extras to that, and they were really, really fantastic giving out. And we had the general public coming in and donating us food, mince pies, cakes, biscuits. Some lovely, lovely people who said, I don't need my winter fuel allowance. I've got a good pension. Here's my winter fuel allowance from the government. And just gave us a cheque or the cash for that. A lovely couple who'd been saving, collecting stamps in their co-op all year, phoned up and said, what would you like for the food parcels at Christmas? We've got X amount of money to spend. And we said, sugar and pasta and this, that. And they just bought it and then delivered it to the hall. And then we distribute it out. So it's a fantastic time. It gets really hectic and busy. The Isle of Wight College lends us some bambarines to keep food warm. Vegetable wholesalers give us vegetables. And it's amazing how the public comes together. But by the time Christmas Day comes, or Boxing Day, we are ready to collapse.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And we sort of go, and just disappear for 3 days to recover. But and add on top of that, carol playing, collecting, when we go out and collect at Christmas, which enables us to fund things. You know, people want the Salvation Army band, so we stand outside supermarkets and towns and we have carol services. A very interesting carol service is we have one inside the Man in the Moon, because it used to be a congregational church.
That's right.
And the manager invited the congregational church and ourselves, and the first Monday in December, whatever day that is, we have a carol service in the Man in the Moon. It's fantastic. The place is full of people having good food, listening to good music, and being reminded what Christmas is all about. It's fantastic.
Because let's be honest, I mean, we talk more on Christmas, you know, in December, if you don't mind. But
we have to start thinking about it now.
I know you do, but you know, I think sometimes we've lost our way with Christmas. It's all about, you know, it used to be we give to receive, or that's what it's like now. Mm. You don't do that. I think that the work that you do is wonderful. And you just mentioned, you know, donations, and you know, I think I urge anybody to, if they see the Salvation out and about, Salvation Army out and about, or they go to an event, or you go to a carol singing event, you know, wherever, don't wait till December. You know, it's not just for December. No. Let's remember that. Make a donation, because as you've heard in the last 53 minutes, you know, the work that you do is incredible. And the thing that I will take away from this is, you know, we could all be in the same boat in a minute. We're three paychecks away from being homeless. And, you know, you are helping those people along with others as well. But, you know, it sounds like you're working, you know, together as a magnificent team. And I just think that needs to be highlighted. So if people are out there and they're feeling generous, yeah, then you know, if you can help, then you should. And I mean, that's basically, you know, what we're saying here. That's the message here. I think it's incredible what you do. I really do.
Thank you.
And you do it with a smile.
It's not just me. It's
no, I know.
Me.
You've got a magnificent team behind
all
you.
Oh, we have, yeah.
And let's be honest. Behind every successful man is an important woman.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you couldn't do it without her, and vice versa. But obviously, you've got a cracking team there. Is there a website that we can find out more details how to help, maybe make donations and that sort of thing?
Yes, you can. The Salvation Army has a website. To type in Salvation Army, you'll get to the national website, and then on there you can click for the Isle of Wight, and you'll find out all about the Isle of Wight contact details, and you can donate. If you want to make sure your money comes to us, always either come and see us in person, or just make sure that you say Isle of Wight Corps of the Salvation Army and it will come to us. We will put it to good use, I can promise you that. And one of the things we are really, I would say proud about, is the fact that we know that when the public give us money, it goes to the coalface, right to the front, and put straight on the front line, and we put it all to good use. And That's fantastic.
We ran out of time. We got the last 30 seconds. I just wonder what William Booth would make of, you know, you sat there on a radio station talking about the Salvation Army and the stuff that the thing that he set up, and you're talking about Facebook and Twitter and things like that. And you think,
well, he said, "I'll fight to the very end while there's one person left." And we keep fighting for that one person to bring them a better life and a better, show them a better life and make a difference.
Fantastic. Look, I've screwed up the script now, and I didn't know whether there was anything in it. Look, Rodney, it's been brilliant.
It's been fantastic. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Good luck. And hopefully we'll see you at some point at Christmas time.
I will pop in, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. God bless.
Stand by. Chris Sullivan's on the way.
This is Vectis Radio.